you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 117 of The Law Entrepreneur. Guess what? I'm Neil Tyra, your host as usual. Today I have Mitchell Greenberg, an attorney in Glen Burnie, Maryland, as my guest. And Mitch is a cool guy. We share a lot of things in common, including our devotion to the martial arts. And you'll hear that come out a little bit. And Mitch is branching out from the family business and started his own solo practice after many years working, as I said, in the family business. You hear all about that and all about how the law champion came into being. So without any further delay, here's my friend, Mitch Greenberg. Mitchell Greenberg, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm delighted that you could make the time to be with us today, Mitch. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
So my name is Mitch Greenberg. My office is in Glen Burnie in Anne Arundel County, Maryland. I worked with my entire family for 24 years. My father and brother, both lawyers. Mom ran the practice.
Oh, wow. My sister,
and
it's a real family affair.
It really is. And we did different areas of law, but there was overlap. And it was great. We're incredibly close. We all lived within 5 miles. And then about 3 years ago, I finally finalized the decision. I've been thinking about it for a while. But I made the decision I wanted to try it on my own. My family really backed me up. So I lucked into finding the most amazing paralegal at a football game. And I opened my practice. I do mostly criminal defense, workers' comp, and some personal injury.
Wow. So, you know, working with your family, it creates a whole different dynamic. We won't talk about, you know, what that is, except if you have some insight as to, because I know, you know, a lot of attorneys work with their spouse.
Yes.
And that can create, you know, its own dynamics, but I suspect when it comes time to leave the family practice, that can raise some eyebrows. But you said your family supported you.
They did. I had a lot of reasons. We're all very close. In my family, growing up, there are no secrets. There's no filters. No? If you're pissed at someone, you tell them, and then you get over it and you move forward. So
it's healthy.
Yeah, it is. And the friends I have and the women I've dated, their families are never been like that. Apparently, it's unusual. So when I made this decision, the hardest part for me has been that I'm not a part of the cases they're doing, even though I still handle some old cases from the family. And It's not like they keep it from me. But it's hard for that separation. We do dinner every Sunday night. We still go vacations together. But I'm like the odd man out. It's a tough decision. And I considered it all before doing it.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was unexpected. I mean, you were well aware of what it meant. How long did you practice with the family?
Like 24 years. I got out of law school in 91, passed the bar, and since then.
Oh, so you had a full career in the family business.
I really did. And we've all been on the Board of Governors. My brother was even president of Maryland Association for Justice. So we're pretty well known and well known as a family. And that's a good feeling to be part of a group that's well respected. So when one member leaves, it does not go overlooked.
Yeah. Well, you know, I often ask guests on the show where their entrepreneurial business sense came from or Or did they always view themselves as an entrepreneur? Was solo practice, you know, in their mindset from the beginning, or, you know, when did it emerge? And so in your case, you're in the family entrepreneurship. So you grew up literally learning the tools of the trade and running a practice in an entrepreneurial environment.
Kind of, yes, in part. My father is not. They don't teach you business in law school.
You know, that's part of the reason for this podcast.
Exactly. And in my father's day, most law students, he was night school. He worked at the University of Baltimore. All of his teachers were part-time teachers at that time. So he just sort of, back then, it's not a political thing, but back then Jews couldn't really get jobs in the big firms.
Yeah.
One person from his class, he happened to be the number one student, got a job with a big firm. Every other Jew had to open his own practice because they had no options.
And that was the time. That was the situation of the times.
But for me, sadly, and it's good that it's changed. So for me, I was very happy working with my family. I've always done things differently, but I never needed to have my own business. I was content, even when I wasn't completely happy. And what finally made me do it was a conversation with my older son, who assessed the stress that I was having and the reasons. And he said, "What's keeping you from going out on your own?" I said, "Well, maybe I can't. Maybe I don't have the attention span." This is never something I really thought seriously about. He said, "Do you think you can?" I said, "Well, I think I can do anything." So, and I mean, this was my older son who talked me into it.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing the lessons we learn from our children?
And we never stop.
Never. And they never stop being our children. Right. Well, that's fascinating. So did you consciously then, once deciding to go out on your own, were you planning the process? Did you kind of make decisions about, am I going to practice in a storefront or an office environment, or am I going to work from the kitchen table? how did that process shake out?
I had so much fun coming up with ideas. And some of them were, I don't know if you remember the TV show Ed. Some of them were finding a bowling alley and opening something there, or in a movie theater or someplace fun. Mm-hmm. Or the back of a bar. And that would have been, I mean, that was a horrible idea, but it did sound like fun.
Right.
So, and bars are typically not that packed up until 5:30 at night. So it wasn't that ridiculous. I wanted to be close to home, which I was until I moved, until I left. So, I had a lot of ideas. And then I went around talking to friends to see if they had open spots, just physically, if they were looking to merge with people. And a really good friend of mine from law school had two vacant offices out here in Glen Burnie. And he said, "Hey, he's not even paying rent on them. I can move right in." So how do you say no?
No, how do you say no? So you moved into a physical office space, and then you get to make all kinds of additional decisions about how you want to set up your practice. And did you know at that point what practice areas you wanted to focus in on, or was that kind of a split off of the family business, or how did you come about choosing what you did?
So that didn't change. I'm well known in the workers' comp community. I've always done criminal. I have my 13th murder case now. I love the criminal. I do a ton of workers' comp. So I knew I was going to do that. I hadn't done personal injury in a long time because everyone else in my family did. I was responsible for workers' comp. Okay. So I did start doing that again. But the main thing was I wanted it to be fun. I wanted to craft this practice around my own personality. I wanted to do things that my family was not comfortable doing. And nothing crazy, but just I find that people respond to energy. They respond to positivity. Yes, everyone has the off-white business card with the printed beautiful letters, and some are more expensive and better paper.
Sure.
But to have a logo and to ride a motorcycle and to have that be part of your image and to have your friends call you Law Champion because it's just fun. And that's what your logo says, and it's on the back of your motorcycle vest. And your friends all know that you're insane. And with Facebook, everybody knows what you're doing anyway. It's a brand. Yeah. And I created the brand. I was amazed to find...
Did you create that brand out of whole cloth? How did... And for our audience, and you can go to Mitchell's website, which is lawchampion.com. And how did that come about?
It was whole cloth. So for years... I used to do martial arts, as did you, yep. And I always viewed myself in the legal, and I also used to do this battlefield fighting with like Gladiator and Braveheart. Sure. Mm-hmm. So that's always just been something I've loved. The passion involved and the thought of championing someone, it just seemed to really merge with my image of doing my job. When I'm getting dressed for court, I'm not putting on a jacket, I'm putting on armor and greaves. And that's always been in my head. As long as I've been an attorney. So to be the Law Champion was just a natural extension.
And it really does fit in with the practice area, you know, workers' comp, you're championing on behalf of employees who have been injured on the job. And
right.
And certainly in criminal defense, you're championing for clients who are facing, you know, tough times, you know, and the power of the state. So it's a different mindset, but it's certainly a combative one. And the challenge is to maintain that persona and to maintain that brand without, you know, it's a thin line between that and being a jerk, which I, you know,
exactly.
I know you're wary of. So it's interesting how you kind of built that process into an identifiable brand.
It was the main, that was all I thought about, was how to have fun with this. And when people identify this company that I hired for to help with some internet with my website, they were so fascinated by the Law Champion concept and by just visualizing it that my caseworker, person responsible for me, said, "Hey, I love making logos, kind of graphic designing. Can I just do one for you for fun, for free?" And it was so amazing. I use it.
Yeah, it's a great logo. Again, you know, we'll have the link in the show notes. But the logo, is it fair to say Roman gladiator holding a shield? Or
It's a gladiator. So a gladiator, kind of the Spartan look, which a gladiator would have had too. Yeah, holding a shield.
Yeah, and the shield has the scales of justice on it.
Has the scales of justice. And he came up with all that.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. I got to tell you, it's very cool.
You know, it's nice to have, when you can have a business that people are excited to be a part of. People are, my clients have problems. It's work injuries or it's criminal charges, and they have a lot to worry about. But when they can be confident that they have a lawyer who does care and who isn't just willing to fight, but enjoys it, I think they've told me it makes them sleep better. It makes them feel better.
Well, it would have to, you know?
Yeah.
So what's your biggest challenge being a solo now?
I never wanted to be a businessman. I never learned it, never took a business course.
Yeah.
Doing my taxes back when I was married, my ex-wife dealt with our accountant. I didn't. My mother dealt with my money, put it into the bank, and my ex-wife did something with it. So I had kind of a charmed existence back then. But now I have a phenomenal paralegal who, she's the one who incorporated us. You know, they teach paralegals how to really do things in paralegal school. They don't teach us how to really do things.
Yeah.
So she did that. But after that, she's like, I'm kind of on my own for most of the business related stuff. So I had to learn how to do it. And it was hard. It's not fun.
Yeah. You know, it certainly is a challenge. And there's always something to draw your attention on the business side of running a practice. And if you're trying to do the legal side, the lawyering side, it can be a stressful situation.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to manage my practice. If you're feeling swamped trying to keep track of cases and clients, but you don't want to pay the hefty price tag of something like Salesforce or other legal-specific tools, I recommend you give Daylight a look. Daylight helps me prioritize my day. It helps me keep track of my clients, cases, documents, emails, calendars, to-dos, and reminders, all in one place. The case management part of Daylight makes it really easy to organize all the details and work for each case so things are done on time. The best part of Daylight is that it lets you work offline. You don't need an internet connection to pull up case details or info about a client like with other CRMs and case management tools. And new in Daylight is their Zapier integration, so you can automate things like pulling new leads from a contact form on your website right into Daylight. And for techies like me, you know that integration with tools like Zapier is really fundamental to making something like Daylight work the way you want it to work. So to learn how Daylight can help you grow your practice, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first month subscription. That's Daylight by Market Circle. The legal environment is more competitive than ever, and small law firms are feeling the pinch. With over 1.3 million attorneys in the United States and counting, it can be hard to stand out from the crowd. And that's why Spotlight Branding helps lawyers become unforgettable. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of internet marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel, and they don't ask them to burn thousands of dollars on speculative pay-per-click advertising. Instead, they're focused on the fundamentals of legal marketing that have worked for dozens upon dozens of years. They use the internet to build a premium brand for solo and small firm lawyers like myself, and they put systems in place to create top-of-mind awareness, allowing their clients to maximize the referrals and repeat business. It's the smart way to grow your law firm. To get more information, visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, and receive a special gift from our friends there at Spotlight Branding. Spotlight Branding, helping lawyers become unforgettable.
So aside from doing it all yourself, you have your paralegal who's helping you, what other staffing arrangements, if any, do you have, or are you doing any outsourcing of work?
So I recently hired a remote receptionist company. Well, I'm trying them out. And one of them who you had on your show, I think Ruby.
Oh, yeah.
That phenomenal. So that one of my paralegal's biggest complaints was that just the phones, because she does so much. And that does take a lot of the stress off.
Good. Well, just to kind of close the loop there, Ruby Receptionist is our newest sponsor of the Law Entrepreneur. So I've been a Ruby client since before I started the podcast. So I can't say enough good things about them. So I think that's a good choice, frankly.
You know, I was so reluctant to spend money on something that I viewed as not necessary. The calls come through to my cell phone. I think I get most of them. It was Google Voice. And then I realized I was missing so many. And it was was her name Diane?
Yeah, Diana Stapleton. Yeah.
I can't believe I remembered that.
Yeah, it was terrific. She'll be thrilled to hear that.
So she was incredible. And I'm driving home through the freaking 895 tunnel, miserable in traffic, but absolutely enthralled by what she was saying. And she talked me into realizing that I needed this.
Badly. Yeah. Well, terrific. Well, you know, there's lots of other opportunities for outsourcing. So as you continue to develop your practice and identify the need, you know, keep an eye on that. And, you know, lots of other folks that have been on the show can help in things like bookkeeping and accounting and other paralegal work. So tell us about, what does the office environment now look like? You said you had office space that you're renting and you got room for growth there. And how are you set up?
Well, for the first time in my life, my family's office is in a beautiful row home in Mount Vernon in downtown Baltimore. For the first time in my life, I'm in the biggest building in Owings Mill in Glen Burnie, Empire Towers. It's 10 floors, underground parking, elevators, which I've never had. Totally different being in a real office building.
Yeah, different look and feel, right?
Totally different, but the convenience is off the chart to actually park in the rain and not get wet.
Yeah.
And the snow, and have someone else be responsible, because we used to shovel the freaking office parking lot.
Of course.
My brother and I.
Yeah.
And you know, that's not good. That was a lot of spaces. Yeah. So it's nice, and it feels kind of like a grown-up thing. But what I did, because the office was pretty bare, there was nothing special, I went and I painted. And then my girlfriend came in, helped me finish. She's far better than I am. Even my son came. So we painted my office a beautiful shade of blue, which I love, because everyone's saying, well, I'll make it off white. I said, no, I don't want that. So I did
this. You want to be different.
I want something I think is pretty, not just unobtrusive. And then I have in my office, because I like to, so I have a standing desk. I've always wanted an electronic one, so I got that.
Nice.
My paralegal has a beautiful leather-topped, because that's what she wanted. I got her a really nice desk, but she also wanted the standing, so she has the attachment for the top. I have, I'm staring right across from my desk at a target, and next to my desk is an unstrung longbow with pheasant-fletched arrows. So I shoot the target. I have my Eskrima Philippine martial arts sticks next to me. So every now and then, I just have fun.
It's funny, I'm just sitting here. Literally, as you're talking, I'm playing with my butterfly knife.
So nice.
We're kind of cut from the same cloth there, Mitch. What role does technology play? It's so funny. Playing with your Eskrima sticks, and I'm sitting here flipping the latch back and forth on my butterfly knife. What role does technology play in your practice?
I have not integrated nearly as much as I should. I've always had just a run-of-the-mill laptop. I bought a Lenovo Mix because the Microsoft Surface was more expensive and you didn't get as much. So the Mix is awesome. I like it. I take it places with me. It's really convenient.
You're portable.
I'm portable. Comes home. I can work from anywhere that has Wi-Fi.
Are you using a cloud storage system?
Yeah. Oh, so. We have Dropbox and all, but our case management system, it's this company, because I tried everything that's out there, and you know all of them, I'm sure. But there's a company that's apparently big in the out west from here called Smokeball.
Yeah.
And it just was everything we wanted. Needles is what I'm most familiar with, but that's crazy expensive. And it isn't, it's not cloud. So Needles, you're tied to your
server.
Yeah. So this, the Smokeball, it stores on your computer, but it's also all in the cloud. It works fine on my cell phone. There's some stuff I'd like it to do, like I can't. Well, there's some stuff it won't do, but it's nothing I can't put back together later.
Right.
So it's been a good system. And my paralegal and I, Elena, we have different name for it. We, of course, call it Smoky Balls. And only because she finds that funny.
Yeah. I first ran into them at the ABA Tech Show in Chicago fall. And that was the first time, frankly, I'd heard of Smokeball. And they had a lovely display and they were really fun people. And I hope to have them on the show at some point because I think they have a lot to offer.
And their support is extremely good. We've just been real happy. What do you use now?
Well, I'm using a product made by our sponsor, Daylight by Market Circle. But I was a Daylight user when I first started my practice. So predates the podcast by a decade. And I've been very happy with Daylight. But it's a Mac-based platform. So if you're in the Windows world, that's not for you. How about social media? I know you're active and you made a point of referencing Facebook. What role does social media play in your business?
So I love Facebook. I think it certainly can be a time pit and can really just take away from all of your important stuff, but it can also be useful. And I have found it to be a very good way of connecting with clients, a very good way of finding out about prospective clients and also opponents and prospective hires. So it's a useful tool. I just hired FindLaw to totally revamp my internet presence. Okay. And they're coming up with a brand new website. They're integrating it with Facebook and Twitter, which I don't otherwise use. So FindLaw to me has always been really good, but really expensive. And I'm just at the point where I feel like it's worth it. Like, well, I want to have a site I'm proud of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't knock your site as it's currently configured. I mean, there's a lot to be said for as it exists today. You know, there was a time when folks looked at Facebook as an example, and they said, "Well, you know, that's not professional enough. I'm a professional services provider. I'm an attorney. I can't be playing around on Facebook." And look, Facebook has its drawbacks. It has its problems, but a lot of people can get a lot of value out of it. We've had several attorneys here on the show who make Facebook a central part of their messaging platform. And I know for you, you know, particularly in your criminal defense work, you have to be Facebook fluent because there's a lot of evidence on Facebook.
I won a sex offense case because, it was a statutory that the girl said she was, and it looked much, much older. The judge didn't want to accept the deal that the prosecutor and I agreed to. The prosecutor thought my guy was a good guy. My guy did everything right except verify how old she was. So he's like, yeah, I don't want to screw up his future. The only way we can avoid him having to register is this. So we're in front of this judge in Baltimore City. I won't mention his name, but he's not known for being the most pleasant or easy or anything.
Or lenient.
Good. or lenient. So we're in front of him and trying to get him to take the plea. And he's just making he's going after, well, me mostly. And I said, Judge, let me show you the photos from this young lady's Instagram, I think it was. Let me show you some photos. I don't care what she looks like. There's nothing you're going to show me that's going to make a difference. I said, well, Judge, would you please take a look? So grudgingly, he looks at the photos. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then he puts him at, fine, I'll accept the plea. I mean, dude, it was off the chart.
Well, and there's an argument to be made that if you're in criminal defense, as an example, that if you're not researching all the participants in the event on Facebook, that it's almost legal malpractice because that's where people live and that's where people work. And for an attorney, it can be a very positive thing. So I'm interested to see how that plays out for you. So what's the biggest mistake then you think you've made? Or what would you, at this point, would you do differently?
I guess technically the biggest mistake, I'm lucky in that I haven't, I've just, the stuff that I've done marketing-wise has all been fine. I spend a lot of time with bikers, with biker clubs. I was I'm Maryland's attorney for this group Aid to Injured Motorcyclists. And I was the attorney for our Confederation of Clubs until the COC shut down about a year and a half ago. So I spend a lot of time with them because I like the guys. It has not been a phenomenal business decision, but I like it. And I go to their events, and it's because I just love being a part of it. They're the most charitable people I've ever met, a lot of these guys.
Yeah, well, it sounds to me like that it's an area where you can continue to develop relationships, and who knows what happens down the road. I got to tell you, does video play any role in your future?
Video, like advertising?
On your website or
yes.
Commercials or...
I did 3 radio ads, which the only reason I did it is because the guy got to me because he's a friend of a lawyer. He's a brother of a lawyer who I'm friends with. And he came in with this whole plan with the Law Champion. You have to listen to it. It's on my Facebook page.
Oh, I've listened to them. They're great.
It was the first time I heard it. Oh, man, it's over the top. I'm a little uncomfortable. Then it's like, but that's what I want. So as far as video, yeah.
Well, see, that's why I asked, because having listened to the radio spots, it just cries out. Because the image, I can see the fade shot at the end of the commercial is the Law Champion, motoring away on his Harley. And I think that's a powerful image.
it would be great. And when I first started doing this, I have a buddy who he used to do the Battlefield stuff with me, the most creative guy ever. He now has a production company. He came up with a really great idea, but I just started and wasn't ready to spend the money on it. But I hope to be soon, because that would be fun.
Great. Well, Mitchell, I want to thank you for being on the show today and taking the time to be with us. Tell our audience how they can reach out and contact you if they want to follow up on anything that they've heard today.
Well, thank you, Neil, for having me. You can reach out. My website is lawchampion.com, spelled like it sounds. You can call me here, 443-672-8529, and I'll handle any case in Maryland. I'm also licensed in D.C. I've done some. So I'd love to hear from anyone I can help.
Great. All right, Mitch, thanks again for being a part of the show today.
Okay, Neil, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through the Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.